Dry Town. Frank Kellerman stood behind the bar on a Friday evening in December of 1918 and poured a whiskey for a cattleman from Lovelock and thought about the fact that in 3 days he would not be able to do this anymore. Nevada had voted itself dry. The state prohibition law would take effect at midnight on December 17th, a full year before the rest of the country caught up, because Nevada, which had a talent for being first in matters that other states approached with caution, had decided to lead the way into sobriety, or at least into the legal appearance of it. Frank was 38 years old. He had run the saloon on Virginia Street since his father Otto died in 1911, and Otto had run it since 1871, which meant the Kellerman Saloon was older than most of the buildings on the street, and older than some of the streets themselves. Otto had opened it when Reno was a railroad camp with ambitions, and he had served miners and cattlemen and railroad workers, and later, the divorce women and their attorneys, and the men who came to Reno for reasons they did not discuss and left for reasons they did not explain. Frank had inherited the business and the building and the long wooden bar that Otto had shipped by rail from San Francisco in 1873, a bar made of walnut that had been polished by 50 years of elbows and forearms until it had the dark, rich sheen of something that has been touched by 10,000 people and remembers all of them. The cattleman from Lovelock drank his whiskey and set the glass down and said, "What are you going to do?" Frank had been asked this question approximately 400 times in the past month. His answer had evolved from anger to resignation to something that was not quite acceptance, but was closer to it than he liked. "Soft drinks?" he said. The cattleman looked at him. "Soda water, lemonade, sarsaparilla, coffee. That's not a saloon. It's a soft drink parlor. That's not the same thing." "No," Frank said, "it is not." He had spent the past 3 weeks preparing. He had moved the liquor stock to a location he did not discuss. He had ordered cases of soda water and ginger ale and a syrup dispenser that he had seen advertised in a catalog from Chicago. He had painted a new sign for the front window that said Kellerman's Soft Drink Parlor in letters that were dignified enough to be taken seriously and large enough to be read by anyone who might be interested in the legal status of the beverages served within. His wife, Nora, had watched these preparations with the particular patience of a woman who had married a saloon keeper and understood that the saloon was not merely a business, but a location in her husband's mind, a place where he was most fully himself, and that what was happening to him was not merely a change of inventory, but something closer to a small death. "You could sell the building," she said one evening. "I could." "Open something else." "I could." She waited for him to say what he intended to do, and he did not say it, because the thing he intended to do was the thing everyone in Reno who owned a saloon intended to do, which was to comply with the law on the surface and make arrangements beneath it, and this was not a thing that needed to be said aloud, because saying it aloud would make it a plan rather than an understanding, and plans could be described in court, whereas understandings could not. On the last legal night, December 16th, the saloon was full. Not celebratory, not exactly. There was no toast to the end of an era, no dramatic last pour. The men who came were regulars, and they drank the way they always drank, steadily and without ceremony, and when midnight approached, Frank did not make an announcement. He simply stopped pouring at 11:45 and said, "That's it, gentlemen." And the men finished what was in their glasses and put on their hats and left, and Frank locked the door and stood in the empty room and listened to the silence, which was different from the silence of a closed saloon, because a closed saloon would open again in the morning, and this one would not as what it had been. He washed the glasses, he wiped the bar, he performed the closing routine he had performed 6 nights a week for 7 years, and his father had performed 6 nights a week for 40 years before that, the ritual of shutting down a place where people came to drink, a ritual so familiar that his hands did it without instruction from his mind, the way a horse walks a known trail. The soft drink parlor opened on December 18th. The sign was in the window. The soda water was cold. The ginger ale was adequate. The sarsaparilla was, Frank conceded privately, not terrible. The customers came. Some of them were the same men who had been there 2 nights before. They sat at the same bar and occupied the same stools and ordered soda water with a particular inflection that communicated nothing that could be repeated in a courtroom, but that Frank understood perfectly, and he served them soda water, and if the soda water was occasionally accompanied by something in a coffee cup that was not coffee, this was a matter between Frank and his customers and the walnut bar, which had seen worse and said nothing. Frank missed the honesty of it. That was the thing he had not expected. He did not miss the liquor itself, not particularly. He missed the straightforwardness of a man walking into a saloon and ordering a drink and receiving it and paying for it, a transaction so simple and so old that it predated the town itself, predated the railroad, predated everything except the human desire to sit in a room with other people and drink something that took the edge off the day. Now the same transaction happened, but it happened sideways, through implication and euphemism and the careful maintenance of appearances, and Frank, who had inherited his father's German preference for directness, found this exhausting in a way that the actual work of running a saloon had never been. But the bar was still there. The walnut bar that Otto had shipped from San Francisco, the bar that was older than Frank and older than the century, and that held, in its dark grain, the memory of every hand that had rested on it. Frank wiped it down each night the way he had always wiped it down, and the wood was warm under the cloth, and the building was quiet, and Virginia Street was quiet, and Reno was dry, officially, and Frank Kellerman ran a soft drink parlor, officially. And the arrangement held, the way arrangements do when everyone involved agrees not to examine them too closely. Historical note. Nevada enacted state prohibition on December 17, 1918, more than a year before national prohibition took effect under the 18th Amendment in January 1920. Reno had approximately 50 licensed saloons before prohibition. Many converted to soft drink parlors that continued to serve alcohol discreetly. Enforcement was inconsistent, and Reno's transient population and proximity to California complicated federal efforts. Prohibition would be repealed nationally in 1933.